Working Cows Podcast, Episode 52.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, your host of the Working Cows Podcast, back with an episode again. Wally Olson is my guest today. It's an honor and a privilege to have him on. Wally has had lots of experience in ranching, not the least of which was being exposed to the techniques of Bud Williams and his stockmanship and his marketing, and has put those things into practice in his own life and has seen the benefits of those things and has started to now teach some of those principles since the passing of Bud Williams. Tell you something about the character of Wally. He reached out to me after the Brock Terrell episode at workingcows.net/23, workingcows.net/23, if you want to check out my episode with Brock Terrell about improving profitability. Wally reached out to me after that and just told me that he appreciated that episode, which meant a lot to me, one of the cooler experiences I've had as a result of taking on this endeavor of the Working Cows Podcast. He reached out to me to let me know that he appreciated the deal, and I said, you know, an email would have done just fine. He said, you know, I like to reach out to people in the most personal way I possibly can to let them know I appreciated the job that they did, and so that was really a neat experience for me. And since that time, I have been working to get Wally on the show and was able to get that done. So, Wally, thanks for joining me on the Working Cows Podcast.
I am truly thrilled to be here.
You have an interesting history in the ranching industry, and it kind of sounds like it got its start during a difficult time in the 1980s. Can you talk to us a little bit about, maybe we've got some younger listeners who might have been born in the 80s but weren't intimately familiar with the climate of the 80s as far as agriculture is concerned, and specifically ranching. Could you talk a little bit about that climate that you got started in?
Yes. Well, the 80s, you know, was the ag crisis, but you have to realize that we had the 60s and 70s before that, and it was, in theory, a pretty easy time. I mean, as long as you produce something, there was a pretty good margin there, and you just could get by with production. So, consequently, it got to where you could be completely leveraged with beginning government programs, and consequently, my wife and I started ranching, and we were very completely leveraged. And as long as the interest rates were, you know, at 5% and 6%, it worked wonderful. And then the 80s came along, and interest rates started going to, 18. Some people got up to 20% interest rates, and so very good operations went very bad very quickly. Understanding how to use leverage stuff is very critical. One thing that I see in ranching that was a problem there is we had too much stuff invested in stuff that didn't make you money. And like I said, you know, the further you get away from a cow in the cow business, the more trouble you're in. And to be in the cow business, all you have to do is own a cow. You can, other people will do everything else. So you need to understand why you're in the cow business and what your goals are.
I probably said it too many times, and people probably get sick of hearing me say it, but, you know, in the 70s, my dad was going through some classes, and one of the teachers said, we're coming to a time in agriculture when somebody's going to own the land, somebody's going to own the cows, and somebody's going to own the equipment, somebody else, you know, three separate individuals. And I think that's maybe we're starting to see that happen, where there's just too much overhead for somebody to be able to own all three of those things at the same time, and the equipment's gotten too expensive and the land has gotten too expensive. So there's a lot of times people are not in a place where they can own all three, especially not starting out. Is that kind of what you see?
Oh, I would definitely agree with you. And one thing on starting out, you know, you need to. There's people out there that have land for different reasons, whether they inherited it or just different reasons they have land. And I'm talking about young people. And then there's also some young people out there that have very good jobs that have money. You know, the two of them need to come together and, you know, work together and probably achieve most of their life goals. But just understanding, you know, what your goals are. And, you know, like Bud Williams always said, know and understand yourself. And that is a huge thing for me, to really appreciate what you like to do and what you want to do and, you know, what you don't like to do and what you won't do are very important things to understand about yourself.
Do you see any relationship between where we are now in ranching and where maybe ranches were in the 60s and 70s?
Yeah, one thing with the, like my dear old dad said, you know, when he was 80 years old, he could go out and put up more hay when he was 80 years old than when he was 20, you know. And he talks about there was no way when he was 20 years old he could carry $10 worth of groceries out of a grocery store. And when it was when he was 80, he just put it under one arm, you know, kind of a deal. You know, we've allowed ourselves to, you know, to me, I just call it prop the cow up. I mean, you know, let a cow be a cow and make her work for it. You know, we take a very simple business of, you know, harvesting sunlight energy and turn it into beef and make it so complicated and hard and not profitable. You know, it could be, you know, it just needs to be simplified. And one example of that is there are millions of calves in the United States that are tagged every year that we build all these things so we can tag them, and nobody ever uses the information. They just put tags in these calves' ears, and nobody gathers any information. Nobody uses any information. I worked for, or I neighbored when I was at Oldsburg, Kansas. I neighbored and helped a neighbor, and he diligently weighed his calves every year. One day he made a statement that over all the years weighing all these calves, he never used it, because by the time he culled the, you know, the crippled and the wild ones and the old ones and the open ones off, that was all the calling he wanted to do anyway. So he very seldom called for, you know, performance.
Are you telling me that a cow doesn't need a tag in her calf's ear to tell which one's hers?
I would probably completely agree with you. And if you've got, you know, the eye in the field of ranching, yeah, you probably don't need it. You know, it needs to be done. You know, you need to have some skill level there. But, you know, you figure out what it costs you to do that. It's just, you know, it's just amazing what it costs. And very few people use it. And so it just amazes me. But,
and irrespective of cost, it's probably the most dangerous thing anybody does outside of a tractor in ranching.
Probably, I would probably agree with you. I know at one time when I was managing the Kelly Ranch, a cow got a gentleman working there, and I don't know what it ended up costing total, but it was probably $50,000 or $60,000 to get them all put back together.
So this would be a good time to transition to a question from my private Facebook group, the Working Cows Mob. Derek Schwanebeck, who's been a guest a couple of times on the Working Cows podcast, wanted to know what was the most profitable enterprise you've ever undertaken in ranching, and what was the least profitable enterprise you've ever undertaken in ranching?
Probably one of the most profitable one is in 2011, the drought in Texas. We bought a whole bunch of wet bag cows out of there. Excuse me, it was 2012 we bought them, and we bred them, and we calved them twice, and in 2016 we sold them with their calves, or 2014 we sold them with their calves on them. The cows cost about $500, and the cows average $2,950.
Yeah, that's a good one. That'll work.
Yes, that will work. And one thing, bear in mind right now, if you do the relationship in the cow business, just yesterday in La Junta, Colorado, I didn't buy very many of them, but I bought exactly two cows, and they cost me $480. One is a 3-year-old cow, and one of them is an 8-year-old cow. But, there is opportunities out there.
Yeah.
And you said the least profitable thing is probably the least profitable thing I was involved in. I have a self-directed checkbook IRA, and in theory you have to have supposedly your money invested all the time, and this is after we had a wonderful run up, 2012, 13, 14, 15, and in 2016, I thought I had to have my money invested in that. You had to have it invested in working, and needless to say, every sudden these were in stocker cattle that we had in a grow yard, and you got to understand, every so often you get a pen from hell, and this happened to be a pen from hell, and we had a very high death loss, a death thing bill. They didn't perform very good, and the market dropped. That was probably the worst deal that I was in.
What do you think it's going to take in the next few years for young ranchers that are looking to start out? What are some of the things that they can be doing as they're getting started to ensure long-term profitability and success?
Andrew, one thing is understand that when you're starting out, you have to, you need to. To me, you need to have your money just invested in what makes you money, and that is animals. You do not need a pickup, and you do not need a trailer. You don't need land. All you need to have your money invested in is the animals. Like I said, the further you get away from a cow or more iron you put on her back, the harder it is to make it work. To me, in this country, we've got, just like myself, we've got older guys out there that either have land or they have money. We need to come together, flow these operations, through, we don't need to, sell one out and the realtor gets 6% and you have to pay taxes and all that stuff, and then the young man has to start out and he pays 5 or 6% for interest, and it just seems ludicrous to me. But we also, both parties have to understand it's give and take. That's where the big crutch comes in, because it's just that we think that we all know the best way to ranch. You got to have compromise.
What are some of the give and take relationships that you've seen work in your experience as far as people who've partnered with other younger people and been able to continue in the ranching industry and help somebody else get their start?
One of the biggest things is my guiding. I'm a big proponent of, like I said, I spent a lot of time with Bud Williams, and I'm a big proponent of his marketing and stockmanship and stuff. But I am also a big proponent of ranching profit, and David Pratt, healthy land, happy families, and profitable business is the way I offer. You understand what I'm saying? When I invest with somebody, they have to be improving their land, the family has to be happy, and we've got to have a profitable business. So that's just the three things that I look at. I'm not interested in calf weaning weights, and all the other stuff that we do, because it's proven over and over that you don't get paid for big calves.
Is that because it takes so much more iron to prop that cow up to get those big calves? Is that kind of how that tends to play out in your experience?
Well, it is the cost, but also the market just literally doesn't pay you for it. I have sat over at Joplin, Missouri, in the spring when grass fever is going, and I have watched ranches sell their calves out, and I've watched buyers buy them, and, you know, over there in mid-March or late February, a 500-pound steer calf is the number one animal to buy to go to grass in the Flint Hills. And I have watched, you know, ranches sell their calves. The 500-pound calves will come in and they'll sell for, you know, say $500, you know, and the 600-pound calves will come in and they'll sell for $490 per head, you know, $10 less. And I just don't understand it. If you go back and figure out when you pass over 450 pounds, to me, is the optimum calf to produce. And because your costs are such that it's the cheapest calf for you to produce. Now, I'm not saying that you cannot take that calf, and if the market's willing to pay you to put weight on it, but you keep that calf and continue to put weight on it. You know, your cost structure says that when you go over 450 pounds, you are getting into a very gray area of whether it's profitable. And besides that, producing a 450-pound calf is easy. You do not have to be calving in the middle of winter. It just amazes me how hard we work at stuff.
I got a couple of follow-up questions on that then. What age do you usually find those 450-pound calves being? About how old are they? When were they born? When are they being sold?
I have found now a May or June calf. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
We'll reach that about, you know, in December or something, you know, when you're, you know, if you're not pushing them real hard. And you're, you know, you're moving that calf. You know, it's easy to have the cow in condition, the calf to breed back. It's, you know, she's, you know, you don't need many facilities to calve her out. And also you're moving her into that calf into a lot better market.
Sure. And then the second, follow-up question that I have is, how do you go about determining whether or not the market's going to pay you to put weight on that calf?
It's the market today. You take, if you have a 450-pound calf, you see how many dollars it is to move that calf up to 500 pounds, and take those dollars and divide it by 50 pounds, and you come up with the value of gain. And you just look at the value of gain today, because that's the only market that you know.
Very
you understand
good.
What I just said there?
Yes, sir. Yeah, yep, absolutely. Yep, very good. Value of gain based on the market today.
Yep. And you just, you know, if it's telling you, you know, if the market's saying to put the weight on, go ahead and carry it down the road. And if the market, you know, is not, just sell the calf.
And what are some of the methods of putting the weight on that you've seen turn good profit? I mean, are you talking lock them up, keep them out on grass? What are you?
Well, I, you know, whenever, to me, when you lock one up, you are just bringing on lots more problems. I'm a big proponent of grazing because you can just, you know, it's just cheaper. I mean, you just have less risk there and less problems there. And one thing, if you watch the you know, just like one day I spoke at before Kit Farrow's sale a number of years ago, and it showed in La Junta, Colorado, if you had a 500-pound calf in November and you put it on grass, you know, and just gained it a half a pound a day and sold it the next spring, I can't remember the numbers, but it made a very good return. If you took the same calf and put it in a grow yard and it weighed 800 pounds coming up, it just ate your lunch, because everybody was wanting that 525 or 50 pound calf, you know, in March, and nobody was wanting that 800 pound feeder animal in March. So, you know, gain, you know, you need to, Bud Williams always talked about value of gain, and he's not talking about weight gain so much. It's just total gain in the value of the animal. And that's what you need to be looking at.
Very good. What are some of the other principles that can help someone develop a marketing plan that will continue to help them analyze whether or not they're going to be a profitable business?
The one thing that I am just adamant on is that you track your inventory value. And I'm talking, well, I'm talking about whatever you have. But basically, in the cow-calf business, there's appreciate, you know, in the marketing, there's inflation and deflation going on. And that's just the market going up and going down, which you do not have any control over much. And you just have to maintain your inventory and weather through those things. But there's also appreciation and depreciation that goes on. And appreciation is when the value of an animal goes up, which most of the time a heifer calf from when, you know, she's a weaned heifer calf is most of the time the most undervalued thing in the inventory of a cow-calf producer. And most of the time the most overvalued animal that you have on inventory is a five-year-old cow. And if you can capture that appreciation on carrying that heifer calf up to a five-year-old cow and then selling her before the depreciation kicks in as she goes down to being a cull cow, it's just phenomenal. You know, most cow-calf operations are real close to break-even operations because, you know, we do not ever capture that the appreciated value of that animal. And then also we don't have any turnover, which just eats you up.
So when you talk about the value of your herd as a whole, are you saying that more than maintaining the numbers, that you should be looking at maintaining the value of the herd as a whole?
You need, what you need to do is every year you need to have, you know, a column, you know, and you need to have, you know, weaned heifer calves, yearling heifers, bred heifers, first calf heifers, you know, third, you know, second, third calf heifers, and have a value on that and see how the value of them changes and capture that value before they start tailing off in value.
And there's going to be times when it's a better idea to own a certain type of cow because the market is demanding other types of cattle. Is that correct?
Well, what I'm just saying is that most of the time, the heifer calf, you know, will appreciate up in value, and then a cow will hit her top value, usually around 4 or 5 years old. And then as she starts aging, her value drops off down to a cull cow. And it's interesting that a 550-pound heifer calf and an 1,100-pound cull cow are usually about the same value, you know, in total dollars, which, I, you know, it's just amazing. Since I started, I do what I call the cow bell curve, which tracks, you know, the value of a heifer calf, the value of the bred cow and the value of cull cow, and seeing the difference between the two is how I track it, just to see where I need to be moving it. Because that difference, you know, between a weaned heifer calf and a bred cow is has been running up to you know, like $1,000. But what was interesting during the drought this spring or this summer, that relationship, because heifer calves stayed up and the bred cows came down, it got to $14. That's a tremendous difference. I mean, that was, if you ever wanted the time to get in the cow business, right now is the time to do it because they are way undervalued to everything else.
What age group do you see as being the most undervalued at this point?
Right now, a young, thin, you know, April and May calving cow, first stage cow, is you can buy her for you know, I've been buying them, you know, between $600 and $800. You know, a calf, you know, there's lots of calves selling, you know, for $800 and $900. You know, it just doesn't happen this way. And the difference between January and July, in January, my brother-in-law, the ranch that he managed for a number of years, he had retired prior to this, but the ranch sold and they sold the cows out, you know, all in one day. And the difference between the highest valued bred cow and the heifer calves was $1,039. And in July, in Joplin, Missouri, the highest priced bred cow was $850, and the heifer calf was $836, or just $14 different.
Hmm.
That is, to me, it's, you know, it's just, that's just a no-brainer. I mean,
right. What are some of the characteristics of profitable herds? Do they tend to be younger, with people capturing that appreciation? Are they a mix of young cows that have been developed on the place and older cows that have been brought in at a cheaper price? What does that relationship look like in your experience?
To me, both of those, you know, like I said, I'm not opposed. You know, everybody talks about longevity. And if anybody hears this podcast and can explain it to me, I would appreciate this. I, you know, you hear and people say, well, a cow isn't paid for till she's 8 years old. And I would like to see the numbers on that. I just, nobody has ever showed me the numbers. To me, a cow needs to pay for herself every day, you know, and that's the way you do that, you sell her. But to me, on longevity, everybody goes on about longevity, and I have, you know, done studies, or not studies, but taken people's inventories of their herd, and, you know, 75% of your cows are 5 and younger, 20% are 5 to 10, and 5% of the cows are over 10 years old. And, they talk about those bonus calves, and you talk about longevity. Everybody talks about their one cow that had 20 calves, and she's 22 years old, which is wonderful, but it's tough to make a living on one cow. Which, to me, what you need to do is you need to understand, what are you going to do with the fallout of your cow herd? I mean, you just need to figure out how you're going to market the fallout. And everybody thinks that an open cow is just the end of the world. And, you know, the open cow is the opportunity to sell her, to create cash flow, to go on and do something else. And a lot of people say, well, you're nothing but a damn cow trader. And I said, I'm nothing but a good cow trader. You're a poor cow trader, because do you own the cows you started with? No, they're gone. So you traded them off, or they died. And, you know, it makes a lot of people mad, but, you know, I'm trying to, you know, point out to them where the real profit centers, to me, is in a cow herd. You know, everybody's got paradigms, you know, and they talk about out-of-the-box thinkers. Well, there is no out-of-the-box thinkers in this world. We're just in different boxes. And everybody is right in their box. And as soon as you learn that, figure that out, you can have a lot better conversations than just doing battle.
Can we talk about the profit centers a little bit? What are these? What are some of those that you see, and how can we capture value in them?
To me, you need to develop a marketing plan. You understand what I'm saying? Understand, you need to have relationships so you know can market animals. Now, just like I talked about, you know, I'm buying cows in La Junta, Colorado. Well, I was not in La Junta, Colorado yesterday. There's a gentleman there that I know that could buy the cows for me. You know, I only bought two because he can take care of them, you know, till I get a load to move them on somewhere else. You know, it's having flexibility, you know, to do things and stuff. And if you do not want to, you know, buy cows and handle, you know, and stuff, just look at your herd, you know, take your herd inventory. It's coming, you know, you're coming up. This, you know, weaning time is a very good time to be doing this, and go through it and say, what is the most overvalued and what is the most undervalued? This is probably one of the first times in a long time that it's going to say, well, you know, you need to be selling those heifer calves and, you know, keeping the cow for another year. I don't know that for sure, but, you know, it sure could be. But look at the value of them, you know, and then just always, it's just like investing in the stock market. You know, you sell the overvalued, bring in more undervalued, you know, it's just investing. That's all it is.
I got one last question before I give you an opportunity to share about some of the stuff you've got coming up, and I really appreciate your time today. Is there anything that we should be doing to add value to open cows?
Is rebreed them. I mean, you know, you read in the papers, you know, add value of their coal cow. Just got a wonderful article on it, and you need to understand it. But you don't need to have coal cows, because after, if you're trying to, you know, add value to a coal cow, you may add $50 or $100. But if you sell a bred cow, you're adding thousands or, you know, $1,000 to it. It's just phenomenal, the difference, you know, that you can make. You know, never ever have a coal cow, and never ever is a long time, you know. is, you know, that's just mine, you know, and, like I tell people, you know, on, you need to turn a bull out with all your heifer calves and let the bull decide which ones are the ones you want to keep. You know, this deal of selecting replacement heifers, that's a bunch of hooey, you know, because all she has to do is have a calf, you know. And if you really want to get a set of fertile cows, you probably need to go to the sale barn when they're selling big strings of feeder heifers and buying all the feeder heifers that you have. Pregnant when they're on grass. They're the most prolific things you could ever own.
Very good. Wally, I really appreciate your time today. Can you direct people to where they could go to catch up with you and be aware of where you're going to be in the future, teaching your marketing schools and things like that?
Most of my life is at Olson Ranch LLC, and the information about schools are there and stuff. And if anybody has any question, you know, my wife and I's mission statement is to help young people. Because it was very, going through the 80s, you know, when we went through the 80s, not all the marriages came through the 80s, and not all the people made it through the 80s from the ag crisis. It's going on right now in agriculture, which, you know, the agriculture should be one of the best places in the world to work, because all you're doing is harvesting, you know, sunlight and you know, producing stuff, and we've got it to where it's, you know, the highest suicide rate and on and on and on. So, you know, our mission statement is to help people, you know, because we all don't need to reinvent the wheel every 22 years like my college professor informed me that all research is redone every 22 years. And the prime example of that is dry lotting cows. I mean, 22 years ago, we were going to put them in the corners of the circles, and we're talking about it today. It's interesting.
Indeed, we are. very good. Well, I appreciate your time today. Workingcows.net/52 will be the place to go to find links to the things that Wally mentioned. Workingcows.net/52. If you want to get in touch with Wally, he's pretty easy to get a hold of at OlsonRanchLLC.com. And again, if you can't remember that, all the links will be at Workingcows.net/52. Wally, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Really appreciate Wally and his time very much. As I said earlier, an honor to have him on the Working Cows podcast. Looking forward to next week as well. Got an interview lined up with Greg Judy, and we're going to talk to him about some of his philosophy of ranching and getting started in ranching and some of those things, and maybe notice a theme here of guests who've written books and been doing big things in ranching. I'm just building up to a one-year anniversary here, first week in November. Got a little bit different episode, or maybe a lot different episode, planned for that first week in November. For episode 55 is the plan for that. So really just appreciate all the support and everything that you guys have been doing as far as supporting the show at patreon.com/workingcows or through the Amazon wish list, or just letting me know that you appreciate the show and that it's been making a difference in your ranching operation. So thanks so much for all the support as we approach our one-year anniversary. Here the first Monday in November, we will release that unique one-year anniversary episode. So continuing to try and feature some bigger name guests as we work up to that one-year anniversary episode. And as I said, next week on the show, episode number 53 of the Working Cows podcast with Greg Judy. We'll see you then.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.